You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. The good doctor sitting in today and a few other days this week. Eric, I think we're in here Tuesday and then Thursday this week, correct?
I don't know. You tell me, Mike.
I can't see you. You have to chair right in front of me.
I'll fix that.
You have to come in and move it out of the way.
I'll do that.
Or I can obstruct. It can obstruct your view. That's fine, too. I don't need to look at you.
Okay.
No.
I'll just turn the lights out in this room. How's that?
No, I want you to move it. So we'll be here, as I said, today, Tuesday, and Thursday this week, and I believe Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week. So looking forward to it. It is a holiday today. It is Veterans Day, and I want to give a shout-out to all the veterans there across the country and across the world who have given their service for this great country, the United States of America. And because it is a holiday, Eric, we're going to have sort of like a Bring It On Anything Goes Day today. Okay, so what I will do is I'll give the phone number for Tom's program here. And anybody who wants to participate, anything's fair game today. There's lots of things out there in the news to talk about. Obviously, Veterans Day. If you are a veteran, if you know a veteran, if a loved one is a veteran, please feel free to give us a call and tell us about your experience in the military. Tell us what Veterans Day means to you personally. 866-987-THOM is the number. Again, that's 1-866-987-8466. So we'll be taking your calls throughout the entire program. Also, I believe in the second hour, Eric, we do have a special guest to talk about Veterans Day in particular, so that should be pretty exciting as well.
Okay, who's the guest?
I'm not going to tell you.
It's one of those surprise things?
Not until we actually have the guest. So also, things that are happening in the world, Eric, let's just kind of rattle some things off. The Philippines, that typhoon was absolutely horrific. Have you seen the video and the coverage of this typhoon?
I've never seen any of the videos, but I've been reading up on them.
I mean, it's crazy. They said that the winds got as high as like 250 miles per hour. They said at that particular force of winds, it would just uproot anything that's in its way, anything.
Right.
And then it had waves 20 feet high. So take the 20-foot waves in conjunction with 250 miles per hour, and boom, you just got devastation. They say that as many as 10,000 people potentially have perished. They quite don't know yet because whole villages, whole towns were just completely wiped out in the Philippines. That's a nation of 100 million people, and they're saying at least 10,000 people died. So that's pretty devastating, Eric, if you think about it. Look, we had a tragedy on 9/11, of course, the terrorist attack years ago, and we lost 3,000 brave American citizens, but this is three times that amount that they're estimating right now. It's like three 9/11s or more in one day. So that obviously is something that the Philippine nation, the Filipino people are having to deal with right now. You get pretty hot in here?
Yeah, it's pretty warm.
Okay.
So I'm going to go take care of that.
Put the air on. Go put the air on. Go ahead. But in any case, so that's something we can talk about today. Also, there was a big election just not too long ago. Terry McAuliffe going up against Ken Cuccinelli in Virginia for the governorship. Of course, we all know now that Terry McAuliffe won that particular race, and that was very important for not only the Democratic Party, but I think, quite frankly, for the country at large. Because coming up in 2014 and then obviously in 2016, the next presidential election, I think the country's struggling right now. The country is struggling to find out who we are, what do we represent, who are we as a people, what are our values. And when you look at some of these elections, Eric, it's very telling. I mean, the fact that Ken Cuccinelli, a Tea Party favorite, a darling amongst the Tea Party, very, very conservative, very far right, he lost a very close election to McAuliffe. Actually, the polls prior to that were a lot wider for Terry McAuliffe. It kind of, in the final days, got a little closer, but nonetheless, Terry McAuliffe did win by a few percentage points. But the question is, what does this mean for the Tea Party at large? Okay, what does this mean for the future of the Republican Party? Because many of the moderates in the Republican Party, many of the people who are even center-right, are now beginning to see that the Tea Party has been a major, major thorn in the Republican Party side. And if they can't get their house in order, look, we saw what happened with respect to the government shutdown. We saw what happened with respect to our debt and the fact that we almost defaulted on our obligations, our financial obligations worldwide, which would have pretty much brought up another great recession or depression. Actually, a depression would have been ushered in if we had defaulted on our debt and didn't raise the debt ceiling. So we were on the precipice of, you know, just complete financial collapse, calamity, and these Tea Party Republicans are willing to take our country to the brink just because of ideology. And the question it begs is, Why can't we get along anymore? There was a time, years, decades ago, where Republicans and Democrats differed in their ideology. They differed in their governing philosophy. But at the end of the day, they were able to at least come together and do what was in the country's best interest. Today, you have a group of, I don't know what, 40, 50 Tea Party Republicans in the House who are pretty much holding John Boehner and the Republican Party hostage. And it's my way or the highway. And they don't really care if American go to hell in a handbasket. If they don't get their way, they're willing to do that. They're willing to put their ideology before the interest of the American people. So that's something else that we can talk about. What is the future of the Republican Party? What does it mean for the upcoming elections, 2014, 2016? You know, Chris Christie, is that the path? Is that the path? I saw on Bill Maher they were saying that Time magazine, you know, featured Chris Christie, and I think the headline was something to the effect that the elephant in the room. So I don't know if that was purposeful or intentional, but nonetheless.
Most likely intentional.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting. But no, but Chris Christie, here was a guy, you know, when we had the natural disaster on the East Coast, Chris Christie and President Barack Obama joined hands because
they
bonded together, and many Republicans blame Chris Christie for Obama getting reelected, but I don't blame Chris Christie at all. I think he did what he was supposed to do as governor of New Jersey. He was supposed to speak to the president, solicit the president's help at the federal level. The president responded to Chris Christie's needs and to the people's needs, and they both together collaboratively did the right thing. And that's what people want to see with respect to governing. I was just looking before we got on live on the air, Eric. I was looking at some of the polls, and one of the most recent polls looked the favorability and disfavorability ratings for Congress. 87% of the country overall disapproves of the job Congress is doing. Only like 8 or 9% approve.
Well, those 8 or 9% aren't paying attention, obviously.
Yeah, but that's so sad if you think about it. You know, 87% of these people polled disapprove of the job that our congressmen and women are doing. And to me, that is absolutely pathetic, and that this is America, and we're supposed to have the greatest democracy in the world, but yet almost 90% of our fellow citizens don't like the job the people are doing that we elected to office. So that's something that we could talk about today as well. Let me give you the number again. We've got a few people on the lines right now, so I want to get to the Freedom Lines here. As I said, it's Veterans Day. We're going to honor Veterans Day, but also it's kind of like a bring it on sort of anything goes day here on the Tom Hartman program. So 866-987-THOM. That's 866-987-8466 if you want to talk about any of the topics I just prefaced or anything else you got on your mind. So that being said, let's go to Wesley. I think we got Wesley on the line from Seattle, Washington, and he wants to weigh in with his thoughts as a veteran. Wesley, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good day, Mike. How are you doing?
Every day's a blessing, Wesley. Every day's a blessing.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, the election of, incidentally, I am a proud veteran of the U.S. Army Medical Corps. But, you know, one thing, over the weekend, or last week, it proved to me that Terry McAuliffe, his election, kind of proves to me that no T-brainer is ever going to be president of the United States.
One would hope.
And, you know,
But that election got pretty close there, though, Wesley. I mean, it was a little too close for comfort from my perspective, because McAuliffe was ahead 6 to 8 points prior to the last few days in the run-up to the election, and then kind of closed the gap. So, I mean, only was like, I think, 2 percentage points when all was said and done. So that's pretty scary, though, to think that there's like 46 or so percent people out there who would support Cuccinelli.
This is true. One thing.
Do me a favor, Wesley. I'm up against the break right now. I'm going to put you on hold, and then when we get back, you're going to be first in the queue, okay?
Thanks.
You just hold on right now. We got Wesley on the line. We got Dave also calling in from KTLE. Richard just calling in from FSTV, Free Speech TV. Give us a shout here in the Tom Hartman program, 866-987-8466.
This is the Tom Hartman program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. A Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. We're going to get to the Freedom Lines right now. They're starting to pack up, Eric, at 1-866-987-THOM. Again, 1-866-987-8466. Let's get back to, I believe, Wesley was on first. So let's go to Wesley here on line number six. Wesley, welcome back.
Thanks, Mike. You know, I've got just one observation and a quick question. I think that within 6 months, everybody in New Jersey is going to be wishing that their governor was named Buono. And how long is it going to take for people in the South to realize that the T-brainers don't care about them? 144 T-brainers voted to cut off everybody's Social Security disability in the country. They voted to cut off my VA benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when are people going to realize that voting for a Republican, if you work for a living, is the stupidest thing on the planet that you can do? What's it going to take, Mike?
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, I'm very interested to see what happens in 2014 and obviously 2016, but clearly this special elections or some of the elections that just happened a few weeks ago were, I think, a clarion call to the Republican Party and the conservative movement that, look, you need to get your act together because more and more – if you look at the changing demographics, Wesley, there's no question about it. There's more and more minorities. The country will be majority minority within the next, I think, 10 years or so. So what that means is if you took all the minorities, black, Asians, you know, whatever, Native Americans, add them all up, Latinos, they're going to be more than white people. And so if the Republican Party keeps disenfranchising minorities, you know, gays, you know, they're not going to have an electorate that is going to vote for them. I mean, they're just going to become marginalized and maybe be some type of regional party, maybe like you said, in the South. But outside of that, they clearly won't be able to compete as a national party unless they get consistent with the times. So but tell me about your experience in the service, Wesley, as a veteran. Which particular division of the military were you with?
Well, Mike, I went in 1972, and the war in Vietnam was still going on. I was lucky. I had good grades out of my medic school, and I was sent to Germany. So I spent my time in the service during the Vietnam War working in a nice warm operating room in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So I was I consider myself very fortunate, and it also was the basis for my medical career. So, but the fact is that what's sad these days is I could no longer recommend that any young person join the service because I don't believe that they're fighting for their country now. I think they're in there to support the interests of Exxon and the Koch brothers.
Right. So your counsel to a young man or young woman would be not to enter
college.
The military today. Just get an education and don't serve your country per se.
Yeah, because I don't believe that, you know, there's I don't know. This president, I think, has been a big boost for military morale.
Right.
I think that if he'd run for a third term, which he can't, but if he were, I think everybody in the military would vote for him. I think that, he's given them back a lot of pride. And
interesting.
I think we should all be proud of this president. I certainly am.
I'm definitely proud. Well, listen, Wesley, a lot of people on the other line, so appreciate it. Thank you for your service, too.
Thanks.
Okay, that's Wesley calling in from Seattle, Washington, opening up another Freedom Line here on the Tom Hartman Program at 1-866-987-THOM, 1-866-987-8466. Eric, I'll tell you, I was doing a little research prior to the program today, looking at some of the statistics with respect to Veterans Day. And one thing that struck me, there was an article online about New York City and the soup kitchens and the pantries in New York City. And according to one estimate, 40% of New York City veterans are now accessing soup kitchens or pantries because they're going hungry. 40% of New York City veterans.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot, but it seems to me like over the years it's always been that way. I mean, a lot of homeless people are vets.
I mean, 95,000, that's 95,000 veterans in New York City that are accessing soup kitchens and pantries just to feed themselves on a day-to-day basis.
That's how our country pays them back.
Right, and this is what I'm saying in a certain sense where I agree with Wesley that you know, I wouldn't necessarily encourage somebody at this particular time to go to the military because, you know, look, it's great to, you know, wave the flag around and wrap yourself in the flag and say, you know, go America and, you know, let's just kick some butt and be, you know, the best, meanest, leanest military in the world. But the bottom line is, Eric, what happens when they come back from serving in combat? See, as a progressive, you know, I think we really care about these veterans and what happens when they come back. I think for the most part, when you talk to conservatives, conservatives just want to put them out there on the field, just want to put them out there, let them do the fighting, let them get wounded, let them get shot, let them get killed, let them get post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injuries, and then when they come back...
Soup kitchen.
Yeah, it's soup kitchen time. It's, you know, no longer are you our problem. You know, we're
done with you. We've used you up. There
right.
you go.
Exactly. And that's, to me, the thing that I find very, very disturbing with how our veterans are treated today in America. And I think it's widespread. Look, I'm a physician, and I train at the Veterans Hospital in Tucson. I saw a lot of the veterans and the trouble that they had coming back from war, Eric. I mean, post-traumatic stress disorder is not something to just, you know, kind of sneeze at, you know, not to ignore. I mean, it's a very debilitating illness that you just can't run from. I mean, it's there with you every moment. Not only every waking moment, even when you're asleep.
Nightmares.
You can get nightmares and things like that. So I think we need to do more for our veterans. Other than just honoring them and saying thank you for your service, which obviously is a nice thing to do on today's program, but what are we going to do about the 95,000 veterans in New York City who are hungry going to soup kitchens? Do you know 22 veterans on average right now every day? 22 veterans every single day die as a result of suicide.
They should be treated like the heroes they are. And, you know, there's like Tom Cruise, who makes millions of dollars, made a comment the other day in a court proceeding that his job is like fighting in Afghanistan. And he's making millions of dollars,
yeah,
and these people come out with nothing.
That's ridiculous. 22 people killing themselves every day, veterans, because they see no way out. That's not how we support our troops. We could do better here in this country. 866-987-TOM. THOM, that's 866-987-8466. Back with your calls in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Broadcasting from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today on our special Veterans Day edition of the Tom Hartman Program. Going to get right to the Freedom Lines right as we speak. Let's go first to Dave, listening on KTLE and wants to talk about Vets for Peace. Dave, welcome to the program.
It's KGOE, Dr. Mike, and we used to be a regular, myself and a nurse named Alice. She was 96 years old with your show in Arizona, if you may recall.
Yes, I do recall. Absolutely. That was back in the day, Dave.
Yeah, well, Alice is no longer with us, but she appreciated you a lot, Dr. Mike, and so did I. And I, too, am a veteran, and my issue for today is to speak of this Veterans for Peace, because every Friday in cities all across the country, we stand and face a flag, and yeah, the previous caller there was Wesley from Seattle. He may have
Correct.
Spoken for us, because we all have come to the conclusion now there's nothing at all legitimate about our involvements in the Middle East and such. It's all about profits for Lockheed Martin and Halliburton and such, and that's something that we don't see anybody, you know, supporting. And that's why we stand and face the flag and say with our signs, get out of these wars. They're not legitimate.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, Dave? I remember not too long ago, Dennis Kucinich, Congressman Kucinich, actually was trying to get a new department for the White House, the Department of Peace. And I thought, you know, that would be a phenomenal idea to actually have a cabinet-level position, at, you know, a Department of Peace that really looked at, like what you said, peace. I mean, we're spending, what, close to $500 billion every single year on our military, and much of that goes towards weapons, bombs, machinery. You know, obviously, like you talked about, the military contractors, they're making millions and billions of dollars off of us, the taxpayers. But yet, where's the money going towards maintaining a peace you know, the Department of Peace. I think it would be a great cabinet-level position.
Well, we're still supporting it. We have been since the beginning. The Vets for Peace very much felt Kucinich's measure for Veterans for Peace would be a very worthwhile endeavor right now. I, incidentally, am also Bertrand Russell in your chat room. You don't hardly ever drop in. That's in Tom's chat. So.
Okay. All right, good. Well, listen, Dave, I appreciate the call, and thank you for your service to the country.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. All right, it's Dave calling in from Arcata, California. Check that out.
So Eric, was he listening to you from Arizona?
He used to listen previously with the local show.
So he lived here in Arizona.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he listened, but we used to get callers from all over the country for the local shows. So in any case, 1-866-987-THON. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's get back to some more of the callers. Let's go next to, I think, Richard, listening on FSTV, Free Speech TV, and wants to talk about the elections in Virginia. So, Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you. How's it going? I had two questions for you, Dr. Newcomb. They're not really random. I just wanted to ask you about the incumbent in Texas. I believe he was in the city of, I don't think Lubbock, I don't know, but he declared himself a black candidate. And I wanted to know if he was really trying to say that I'm more of an equality side of a man, or more that, you know, I'm part of Border Patrol. I don't know if he was trying to make a stand, but he was patching his profile as a black man. And I was wondering if that had anything to do with either the disgust or the anti-government that is going on with the Border Patrol issue in Texas. And I just want to know your comment on that one.
Yeah, I don't know that pretty well, to be honest with you, Richard. I'm not sure what you're referencing and what, in quotation marks, I'm a black candidate means. So I can't really speak to that directly.
Right. Well, it wasn't a news clipping. It wasn't an article either. It was just that there was a candidate, Wilson, I believe, in Texas, and this was an electoral vote, of course, and he was to be voted in as mayor or whatever, and then declared himself his black. I didn't know whether
I'm not sure what that is. But let me ask you another question before I let you go, though. You're from Rockville, Virginia, correct?
Yes.
What did you think about the governor's race, McAuliffe and Cuccinelli? Give us a little of your own personal impression of the outcome and what your fellow Virginians are saying.
Well, my Virginians have been complaining about the actual farm bill that really hasn't got its way towards the South. The quality of workmanship has been a major complaint because of the job force problem. We've had a candidate called Eric Cantor who represents the Republicans, and in 06 he had a job fair that was more like an inquisition. And
right.
In the job fair it was really just to uphold almost like a police lineup, and that's like really another slap on a lot of the workers here. Because a lot of workers here support AGRA.
Right.
And
interesting. Hey, I want to get to the other calls, though, Richard. So thank you so much for your call today. Opens up another Freedom Line at 866-987-THOM. That's 866-987-8466. Let's get back to some of our veterans. Everybody, look, we got Thomas on the line from WCPT. We got Mark on Free Speech TV. Armand's calling in. Ed, Mary, Jeff. Going to get to everybody today. It's a holiday show, so we're going to go pretty easy, Eric. Just going to speak to the listeners directly. People want to call in. Any topic you want to talk about is great. It is Veterans Day. If you want to speak about Veterans Day, then please feel free to do that. So let's go first to Thomas, who's listening on WCPT. Thomas, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Hello, Thomas. All right, let's move on there. Looks like Thomas is hopefully he's not in a lot of trouble right there. But let's go to Mark on the line from Free Speech TV. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Newcomb. A couple of things I wanted to talk about briefly is you mentioned the service of our military personnel, but what you do and so many people do in everyday life that supports our society, that's an important service as well. And
sure.
As somebody who spent 4 years in the Air Force, it was very sobering to be in even an everyday work environment that could be dangerous in an instant. So I worked on B-52s loaded with nuclear weapons on the edge of an alert pad. It was a very sobering way to decide that you were much more for peace than you were for war, let me tell you. And I think that you mentioned you were from Tucson or that area. Is that correct?
Well, not from there, but I did my medical training in Tucson at the University of Arizona, and part of our training was at the VA in Tucson as well. So I had a lot of work and a lot of experience with veterans,
sure,
from everything from World War I on.
Right. Well, thank you very much for that, first of all. And when you were in Tucson, did you happen to visit the Titan Missile Silo Museum, or was that still in service at that time?
I did not visit that at the time, so I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I highly recommend just south of Tucson taking a trip down there and going through that, because it is a really sobering reminder for people that while we appreciate what service people do and did, we should also acknowledge that if they had failed at those jobs, in a sense, none of us would be here discussing any topic today.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let me ask you this, Mark, as a veteran, what do you think about some of the things I was talking about earlier, the fact that in New York City, 40% of New York City veterans have to go to a soup kitchen or a pantry to get food, 95,000 vets in New York City are going hungry, 22 veterans every day die as a result of suicide. I mean, what is that? What's driving that? Why is that happening in what many people consider the greatest military on this earth?
You know, I think that it does have a lot to do with the fact that once their service is done, there are large segments of our society that just walk away from them and don't look back. And it's shameful behavior in that sense, that we leave people in such desperate straits. I think that what we could do to help people a lot would be simply to do more of what FDR said, which was to make sure that everybody has a job and can make a living wage and can feel productive,
sure,
and do something useful. And, you know, instead of leaving them on the corners to beg for food, which is just, well, this is something that the Republicans seem to be okay with. They discuss it, well, you know, we want to support our troops, but they leave it at slogans on the back of their trucks in places like this, which is the least that they can do, and let me tell you, the least that they can do.
Well, they just got rid of all the food benefits, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP program, and that is going to affect, from my understanding, hundreds of thousands, if not more than you know, a million, you know, potential people who are involved with the military or have given their service to this country. So, I mean, how could you say you're for the troops when you're literally taking food out of their mouths?
I don't think that many conservatives even really notice that. I think they're too busy stereotyping that most people who are poor or need food assistance are those people. They're different. They're brown or they're black or they're Indian or they're somebody, but they're not
the 47. The 47% that Mitt Romney referred to.
Right. So, you know, it comes as a shock to some of them when they encounter they have a personal experience with, say, a white veteran who's done so much for the country, who needs that assistance. And they're going, well, I didn't think that any of you people needed it, just those people.
Yeah, so much for the concept of we the people in order to form a more perfect union. So, listen, I appreciate the call, Mark. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, listen, we're going to get to the other callers here. We're coming up against a break, but we still got Thomas on the line from WCPT. Armin, we're going to get to you as well. Cassie just called in a little bit a while ago and wants to talk about the post-traumatic stress disorder. Ed, also calling in from Saginaw, Michigan. We got Mary from Linden, New Jersey. Harvey from Mill Edgeville, Georgia. Jeff from Shelton, Washington. And then Jim from Boise, Idaho. Quite a wide swath of the country, Eric.
Yes, it is.
Represented here live on the Tom Hartman program. Back in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. Let's go first to Ed, listening on Free Speech TV. He's in Saginaw, Michigan, and wants to talk a little bit about cannabis sativa. Ed, welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
In Israel, our closest ally, marijuana is legal over there. They're doing a lot of research on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand what the holdup is here.
Well, it's becoming increasingly more legal, if you will, if that's a way to look at it, here in America. Just Portland, Maine was the first Eastern Coast city to decriminalize it, make it legal. I mean, a bunch of states have now passed at least medical marijuana laws. Several states like Washington and Colorado have allowed now personal possession, and they're selling it, they're taxing it. So I think this is going through the same sort of thing that happened with respect to prohibition, Ed. I think it's going to take time. It's a generational thing, but slowly but surely, I think you're going to see marijuana not only legal from a medical perspective in this country, I think marijuana is going to be legal from a personal use perspective too, and I think that's going to happen in all 50 states probably in our lifetime.
And I got one other question too. Why don't they retrain our workforce, bring all those jobs back to America? I was in the service. I went when I was working for General Motors. And when we came back, we had a job.
Right.
Are you there?
Right. No, I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay. I mean, we had a job when we came back. And why don't they retrain the workforce and bring them back?
You mean as far as the veterans are concerned?
Anybody that wants to get trained. Not only veterans, anybody that can get trained just to bring those jobs back from overseas.
No. I agree with you. Well, listen, Ed, I appreciate the call there, and I think it's a great idea. Surely workforce training, skill set development, that's something that we should always be investing in if we truly believe in we the people in order to form a more perfect union. And whether it's veterans, whether it's people who now, because of the increased technology that we utilize in our society, maybe jobs like manufacturing, where you used to have blood, sweat, and tears, you know, work with your hands and, you know, that kind of blue-collar type of work is not just as prevalent as it once was. So now you're going to have to use more intellectual capital, knowledge, technological skill sets. And I think part of that retraining is a very important aspect of our future economy. If we want to compete globally, then sure, we have to have workers who have skill sets that are applicable and germane to the modern day economy. So I agree with you 100%. Okay, let's get back to some of the other callers right now. Let's go next to Mary calling in from WWRL, wants to comment on Chris Christie. Welcome, Mary. Hello, Mary. Mary. All right, we're going to put Mary back on hold because it sounds like she's there in some type of a wind tunnel or something like that. She's been holding for about a half an hour, so we'll put her back on hold. But let's go next to, let's see who's next up in the queue. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff is listening on AM 760. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Howdy. Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Jeff.
So you're talking about Veterans Day. You know, I'm not a veteran. My dad was a veteran. He was in the Navy. I grew up in Hawaii for a little bit, like third grade, sixth grade, and I spent a lot of time at the Arizona Memorial thinking a lot about World War II and, you know, the sacrifices and all that, you know, that veterans have made historically throughout our entire history.
Sure.
And so, well, I never entered the service, but it means a lot to me. And so someone was saying about how citizens, you know, we have jobs too. And, you know, like Tom talks a lot about getting money out of politics, you know, move to amend and all of that.
Sure.
You know, so how do we do that, you know? Like, how do we amend the Constitution to get that 28th Amendment?
Yeah.
And the answer is an Article 5 convention where the states call for it.
Mm-hmm.
We have two states already that have, Texas and California both have initiative resolutions to call for a convention of the states. You know, and just like with the 17th Amendment, you know, we can compel Congress to fix themselves, because if we just ask Congress to do it, you know, they're just going to feast off of the super PACs.
No, absolutely. Jeff, what would you like to amend specifically in the Constitution?
Well, me? Oh, I would love to see corporations are not people. You know, money is not speech. I would like to see publicly financed elections. But the truth of the matter is that I'm not going to be a delegate. I'm not going to be chosen, you
right.
know, and so there's a lot of efforts throughout the states to get the states, you know, and the delegates we would hope would be citizens, you know, educators and non-members of Congress, maybe local state legislators, because at the state level, you know, we still have democracy. They're not funded by the super PACs. They're mostly shaking in fear of the super PACs being, you know, primaried and all these other things. And that's just not the, you know, when you think about the founders, that's not the kind of democracy that they were looking for. They were business owners. They were merchants, doctors, lawyers.
Sure.
You know, they were rich, wealthy people. if they wanted businesses and corporations to have a hand in governance, they could have done so, but they didn't. And, you know, like they said, we the people. And,
yeah, no, absolutely. Hey, one other thing I want to let you know, too. Just we're here in Arizona at 1480 KPHX, and I'm not sure if you are aware of this or not, but we actually years ago put an initiative on the ballot to citizens of this state to get clean elections here in Arizona. So now here in Arizona, all of the statewide elections are publicly financed. And so if you opt to run as a clean elections candidate, we have certain tax revenues that we put into a fund, and a clean election candidate cannot take any outside money, cannot have any outside lobbyists, any specialized PACs. They each get a set amount of money. So for instance, if you're running for governor, you make it to the general election, there's several hundred thousand dollars that are available to you, and it has revolutionized the way politics is done here in Arizona. And this is what's considered a very conservative state, Jeff. And for us as citizens of this state to get a clean election law passed here in Arizona, to me, is phenomenal. And if we can do that here in Arizona, Jeff, I can't see why other states can't follow suit.
Well, you mentioned a key thing. It's not a conservative issue. It's not a libertarian issue. It's not a progressive issue. It's an American issue.
Well, I agree.
Money in politics hurts everybody.
I agree. And that's what I'm saying, is the fact that the citizens of what is historically considered a conservative state all came together and didn't necessarily make it a partisan issue, to me, gives me hope that other states and our fellow brothers and sisters across the country might see the light and eventually change to clean elections and get the politics out of, get the money out of politics. Listen, I got to run, Joe. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Coming up against the top of the hour, we'll be back in the second hour with more of the Tom Hartman program on this special Veterans Day edition.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at stamps.com. And our website, tomhartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at tomhartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom today, our special Veterans Day edition of the program. And we do have a special guest on the line right now. His name is Master Sergeant Scotty Neal. He's the Director of Strategic Development, Green Beret Foundation. But in addition, a 25-year veteran of the United States Special Forces. He actually was one of the first to deploy into Afghanistan following the tragic events of 9/11. Neal has also led multiple combat operations in Afghanistan, Iraq, and the Horn of Africa, as well as an interagency task force to defeat foreign terrorists around the globe. So without further ado, Master Sergeant Scotty Neal, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you, and happy Veterans Day.
Yeah, happy Veterans Day, and thank you for your service here. So, Master Sergeant Scotty Neal, tell us a little bit about Veterans Day. What does it mean to you? Obviously, you have a very storied career in the United States military and 25 years of service. What does it mean to you to have served this country in that capacity?
Well, you know, to myself personally, Veterans Day, I remember as a small kid, it was kind of, you know, a way to go to a parade and to see uncles and grandfathers and brothers and cousins and soldiers and thank them. And then now that I'm returning home, I'm actually in New York City at their Veterans Day parade. And I didn't participate this year. I kind of watched from the sidelines, and it just shows you a sense of patriotism as people come out and really they want to show their appreciation. They want to see and recognize their soldiers and their family. So that makes me feel good as an American.
No, no doubt about it. Well, in the first hour, we were speaking a little bit about New York City in particular, and there was an article, I don't know if you saw that online, where 95,000 veterans in New York City, approximately 40% of the veteran population in New York City, are now going to soup kitchens and pantries because they're going hungry. Any comments on that, Sergeant Neil?
Yeah, well, I think it's an indicator, as we all know. I don't think we know exactly what to do. Veterans of multiple generations have multiple issues, and what I'm really focused on is this post-9/11 generation, and what you see is they served. They joined after 9/11. They mm-hmm. went to multiple tours. They did all of this, and they didn't come home with any regrets. But it's that transition process that kind of is scaring a lot of them. And they don't know how to take any of those skills that they were given and transition those into a career.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, one of the callers from the prior hour, also a veteran, called in and said that at this particular time, he would not even recommend for a young man or a young woman to enter the military for various particular reasons. What is your perspective on this? Obviously, we need a strong military. We need people trained with these skill sets to defend our country, to defend our borders, to defend our freedoms. But some people, because of what's happening now with respect to vets coming home, post-traumatic stress disorder not being treated, traumatic brain injuries not being treated, obviously homelessness is very high as a percent amongst veterans. I mean, what can we do better, Master Sergeant Neil, to address these issues in a very concrete way? Because it's great to have these parades, it's great to wave flags, but as a physician myself, to see these individuals coming home, coming back from war zones and not getting necessarily the psychiatric care or the mental health care that they need, let alone skill sets and jobs so that they can eat and not have to go to homeless kitchens. What can we do to change that culture that exists?
Right. Well, first of all, I'm very proud of my service, and that's just what it was. And unfortunately, your previous caller, I didn't get to hear, but it's not a lot of people go in and they serve their country and they come back and they think, that a VA system is there for them. They think there's a parachute. And what they don't realize is they've been given all the tools and the skill sets and the ingenuity and the entrepreneurialism to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And what happens is because employers and others, and there's such a low amount percentage of modern-day veterans, that they're having a hard time transitioning and translating their skill sets to employment.
Sure.
And so what I'm active in is kind of mentoring and say, hey, there is a translation issue. There is a lack of public-private partnership that enables veterans and not refers veterans to the VA system. And my frustration is I, got out. I was a pretty senior person, and it took me 3 years to go through the VA process to get a rating. I thought that was a very false sense, that I had to wait 3 years, and all of those enabling capabilities of the VA, like jobs programs and the Patriot Loan Express for small businesses, all those other things were tools that were there, but I didn't know about it. How to access the positive side of veterans programs.
Tell us a little bit about the Green Beret Foundation, of which you are the director.
Right. Well, the Green Beret Foundation, as you know, the Special Forces community is kind of close-knit. We're very small, and we're used to being with each other for multiple years. And the Green Beret Foundation is almost like a peer sensor. We know when we are having issues within our own community and the gaps that the treatment centers, and as you mentioned, the PTSD and the TBI, all those narratives that you've been told about, but it really takes a network that then challenges those issues and provides funding and money and connectivity and who's the right doctor and what does the NFL have to do about TBI. So we're able to react very quickly.
Let me ask you this. As far as veterans coming back from combat, are they doing any type of systematized exit interviews, if you will? So, for instance, again, as I'm an internal medicine doctor here in Phoenix, Arizona, did a lot of training in my early days at the Veterans Hospital in Tucson, Arizona. But I would think it would be prudent that given, the circumstance of having to fight and to be in a war zone and to see all the horrible things that you see, it's no wonder that so many people are coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder, let alone obviously traumatic brain injuries. Are there sort of systematized ways of getting exit interviews with each soldier that comes back so that you can have something concrete and have a risk assessment tool to say that, look, based off of, you know, a psychiatrist or a psychologist doing this exit interview, you know, you have certain questions, certain categories, you score it, and then you could risk assess that person on whether or not they have a high likelihood of becoming homeless or not having the skill sets necessary to, as you said, transition to a good job. Is anything like that going on in a very systematized way?
I think there has been since, you know, they'd formed the DOD Mental Health Task Force. We're talking the closing end of war, 2009, when they really started injecting a lot of funds and money. And I remember a lot of money went to the VA to hire social counselors and workers, and then when they would hire this new plethora of counselors and social workers and these analysts for at-risk behaviors, they were just fresh out of college, and they really haven't had a baseline of a life experience to compare.
Wow.
So what was happening is a seasoned person would go and talk with them, and they would feel slighted, like they couldn't relate. And it was hard for some of them to make an assessment because what are you, you know, what's the baseline for the assessment? Now, that being said, all of a sudden I get a rating. I go through this evaluation process, and they say, you're broken to this point, this disability, and here's a payment for that disability. Mm-hmm. Now, on the first, walk over to your, you know, mailbox and pick it up and cash the check. And those weren't the tools that were needed. I didn't need anybody to tell me I had, you know, some transition and related issues. What I needed was a set of tools and a network to help me overcome that.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, listen, we're going to go to a break here shortly, Master Sergeant Scotty Neal. And then when we get back, do you have time for one more quick segment?
Sure.
Yeah, because I want to talk to you, obviously, about this transition and how veterans could access information that might be available to them, but also might want to hear a little bit out of your highlights in your 25 years as a Special Forces person. I'm curious to, you know, hear what that was about, too, if you don't mind sharing some stories.
My pleasure.
All right, we'll be back with Master Sergeant Scotty Neal here in a moment. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, our special Veterans Day edition of the program. We're here with Master Sergeant Scotty Neal. Master Sergeant, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Good. Hey, listen, so tell us a little bit about the United States Special Forces. I don't think a whole lot of people really know kind of exactly what that is. How do you become part of the Special Forces? What kind of training do you have to undergo? And what kind of special missions do you do?
Sure, no problem. You know, the Army Special Forces used to be at one time better known as the Green Berets, the iconic headgear that was authorized by John F. Kennedy. And Special Forces was, you know, it's just what it says. It's special. It's unique. We have unique equipment. We select and train men differently. And I think what has happened in the last 12 years is America, you know, why they see a video game and a Hollywood reproduction, that the Green Berets shy away from press and noteworthiness. And actually, our motto is the quiet professional.
Oh.
So what's unique about Special Forces, take for myself, for example, we're recruited and we go through a selection process. And that selection process for me back in the early 90s was 3 weeks. And it was all individual tasks, physical, mental, moral. And out of that, I went with about 300 other selection members, and only 60 made it through the end of the 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Out of that 60, only 42 were selected. So if you go back and you look at the number one song in 1968 was Barry Sadler's The Ballad of the Green Berets. It was true back then as it is today. And then our training begins. So the journey to earn your Green Beret is you go through a series of schoolings. Mine was for weapons, and then you go through a language, 6 months of language training.
Oh, wow. Which language did you study?
Persian, Farsi, Iranian.
Oh, okay.
Every Green Beret has a secondary language that they're trained to. Sometimes it's Mandarin Chinese, sometimes it's Spanish, sometimes it's French or Polynesian. Not really Polynesian, but, you know, the different regional languages, because that's what a Green Beret does. They're a three-dimensional warrior, the three Ds, diplomacy, development, and defense.
Interesting. Now, tell us, if you can, I don't know if you're allowed to disclose some information, but perhaps one of your combat operations, you've obviously fought in Afghanistan, Iraq, the Horn of Africa. Any one of those particular combat operations stand out in your mind?
Well, I mean, there's the full spectrum. In 2001, I was one of the first ones in, and historically, there were only, you know, less than 300 special operators on the ground the first 90 days. Mm-hmm. And we were a small footprint, but able to dislodge the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And I did certainly flew in a few black helicopters, and I did those correct, you know, direct actions that you always see in the movie, and night vision and lasers and,
wow,
you know, defeat the force. But ultimately what it became was, how do you connect the local villager and what was their needs and desires? How could they resist temptations of drug, you know, profits and warlords and everything like that? And what you see now a Green Beret doing is less of the black helicopter and more of the village stability operation.
Yeah, what I would think that would be very critical to the success of any mission, right, to get the local people on board and co-opt them into an alliance.
Well, exactly. And if you look, you know, at a few community policing activities, okay, is it the SWAT team that really knows the neighborhood? Is it, you know, the kicking down the door that really binds the neighborhood against nefarious activities? It's always been that interaction, understanding the local conditions and the local actors, and being patient enough to unwind all of that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, Master Sergeant Neil, you are now retired, but given all the special training that you had as a United States Special Forces, a Green Beret, is that something that somewhere down the line, if need be, you could come out of retirement if the country needed your particular unique skill sets?
Well, I think, you know, 25 years of Special Forces, you know, takes a toll on the body. My mind is very fresh, and I certainly take a few lumps. My continued service right now, for a while, it's not like I suddenly didn't know anything. So I would advise on human behavior and pattern analysis, and we would talk to our former soldiers, and we would share, you know, a lot of our things. But what I'm doing now is I'm taking the character of a Green Beret. As somebody that is independent, articulate, highly intelligent, used to systems and analysis, and turning them into entrepreneurs or business leaders.
Awesome, awesome.
Those are the core characteristics that make people successful, and, you know, how do you turn that into something positive?
No doubt about it. Tell people before, as we're closing up here, where, if they want to learn a little bit more about your organization, the Green Beret Foundation, where can they go? How can they access information and maybe get a little bit more involved?
Sure. GreenBeretFoundation.org is our website. We also have a Green Beret Foundation YouTube channel. What we do is we highlight successful people who have transitioned. So instead of highlighting the miseries of an injury or the harshness of the VA system, we actually spend our time showing people how other people have successfully gone through that.
Awesome, awesome. And that's www.greenberetfoundation.org, correct?
Yes, it is.
Perfect. Well, listen, Master Sergeant Scotty Neal, thank you so much for your service to this country, and thanks for what you're doing now, helping veterans transition into civilian life and getting them the skill sets that they need to become successful entrepreneurs and successful citizens. So thank you so much.
And I appreciate it, and thank you for giving us a voice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Master Sergeant Scotty Neal weighing in with his particular thoughts. We're going to go to a break here shortly, but we still have a lot of people on the lines right now, Eric, who want to weigh in with their thoughts. So let me give you the number for the Freedom Lines here. And these lines are open throughout the remainder of the show. We have no more guests, so anybody who wants to participate, pick up the phone and dial 866-987-THOM. Again, that's 866-987-8466. We still got Armand on the line from Bradenton, Florida. We got Mike on the line from Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Harvey from Mill Edgeville, Georgia. Yolanda from Minneapolis, Minnesota. We got Paul from South Lyon, Michigan. Jim from Boise, Idaho. We got Will from Blakesley, Pennsylvania. They just keep coming in from all over the country.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, wishing everyone a happy Veterans Day. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, our special Veterans Day edition. Let's get right to the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Harvey, you're live on the air from Mill. Where are you from? Mill? How do you say it? Mill Edgeville?
Don't worry about it, Doc. Lots of people have a problem pronouncing this. Milledgeville.
Milledgeville. Okay, Milledgeville, Georgia.
Yeah.
All right, and so what do you got to say about Veterans Day today?
I'd just like to say that for those who want to celebrate Veterans Day, you can do me the honor to celebrate me this way by speaking out about why we celebrate Veterans Day in the first place. As a combat veteran who served in Vietnam, it was a death sentence for me. I'm a walking dead man now. They tore my dreams apart, shattered my whole life. And I just want to say, let's stop the wars. And like I say, for all the people who want to honor the vets like myself and others, speak out on this day against all wars.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Amen to that. Thank you so much, Harvey. That's Harvey calling in from Georgia there, and obviously, you know, has some very serious issues to deal with having been in the Vietnam War, and that's something, as I talked to you about earlier, you know, with post-traumatic stress disorder and also the behaviors and the psychiatric illnesses that these individuals suffer just don't go away, and they last throughout a lifetime. And I couldn't agree more with Harvey that, look, one of the best ways to honor our veterans is to have no more wars, Eric. I mean, that would be ideally the best parade would be a parade with no veterans in it.
A parade honoring, you know,
just
the day that we stopped all wars.
Right, exactly. So, interesting call there. All right, 866-987-8466 is the number. Let's go next to Armand. Armand is calling in from Bradenton, Florida. Armand, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you for allowing me to come out on your wonderful show, yours and Tom's show. There's a lot of beautiful people in this country. There's a lot of beautiful military people that have their heart in the right place. And I think there's a super good article that has recently been written, and it's by a PhD English literature major out of Canada. And whether you agree with him on everything in his opinion, perspective on everything else outside of the military, his most recent piece that you can find and read is called Veterans Day Requires a Rethink.
Now, who wrote this article?
His name is HENRY MAKOW, Henry Mako.
Okay.
He lost his grandparents in the Nazi prison camps. So this guy's a Jewish gentleman. He's one of the most brilliant writers I've ever followed. He's one of my mentors. I have quite a few on the internet. Thank you very much for the computers, America, and the technological people that allowed me to go out and really get an education. Independent, unbiased. That's what I base my perspective and opinions on a lot of. Sustainability, economically, socially, whatever. And this article is called Veterans Day Requires a Rethink. And basically, to get at the root of the problem, and you're a physician, and you're an internal medicine physician, so you understand in a way that many people that don't have the training or the education that you're blessed with don't understand like you do. Mm-hmm. And the problem always ultimately hinges on the root of the problem. And this article, this gentleman has followed it for many, many years. I mean, if you lost your grandparents, wouldn't that give you an incentive to really put your butt in gear and find out who in the hell's pulling the strings at the top? And it's the people at the top, because we have a regimented system, whether it's Democrat, Republican, independent, and all the blah, blah, blah from the media and the money and the corporations, globally or nationally. We have a very regimented system. And the fact of the matter is, this gentleman, I've learned so much about economics from, it's the international banksters, the globalist banksters. They're the ones at the root of the problem. They're the ones that have the ultimate power. They can go to Obama with a lobbyist and tell him if he doesn't do this, they'll absolutely crash the economy, just like they did Wall Street with Bush and just like they did with Obama. And you could see them both sweating the day the market went down almost 1,000 points.
Right. So basically what you're saying, Armin, the premise of this article has to do with the fact that these big money men throughout the globe are the ones influencing pretty much how our military runs and is operated. And they use that leverage of their economic power to sort of intimidate others, and ultimately the military is just their puppet.
Control.
Right.
Yes,
gotcha.
It's a puppet. It's a puppet. And basically, they're the ones I hold the most accountable and responsible for the misuse of our beautiful people, our young adults, males and females. We lost 50,000 plus beautiful young people in Vietnam.
Sure.
And now the DLC Democrats just can't wait to send the jobs over there.
All right. Well, listen.
The problem with money.
No, no doubt about it. Listen, Armin, I totally appreciate your call. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with the listening audience today. I want to get to some of the other callers, though, too, because so many people are calling in right now at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. So let's go next into the queue. Let's try Mike, listening on 760 AM. He's in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you inviting me on your show here.
Sure.
I'm gonna get right to my point. In lieu of a previous caller that was, for lack of better words, kind of bad-mouthing conservative Republicans, I am a conservative Republican, also a veteran of the Vietnam War.
Okay.
What I believe is our problem, why we can't take care of our veterans, is because we've got bloated government. We're spending way too much money on government agencies that we don't need, and we're sending way too much money overseas before we take care of our own people right here in the United States that fought for our freedoms and continue to fight for our freedom every day.
But let me ask you this. I mean, with respect to what you're just saying now, Mike, as far as the quote-unquote bloated government, when you look at the military, that obviously is a huge expense for the United States. I mean, $400 to $500 billion every year we spend on our military. If we spend so much money, Mike, why can't, of that $400 or $500 billion, why can't we take care of our veterans when they come back from war, when they come back from combat? Why do we have 95,000 veterans in New York City going to soup kitchens because they're hungry? Why do we have 22 veterans every day killing themselves by suicide? I mean, to me, it doesn't make sense. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I have to put it towards, we've got way too many government bureaucracies out there that do nothing for anybody, really, other than the politicians who have been bought by the special interest groups or the lobbyists, and that's all that's all about. And so we're pumping billions of dollars into programs overseas and unneeded bureaucracies right here in the United States of America. And if you took just, say, $10 billion of that stuff that we send overseas and put it into taking care of our veterans when they come home.
Right.
Yeah, I think you would see a heck of an improvement in how our society is today.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I think that'd be a great idea to actually allocate specific funds for veterans, particularly when they come back from combat and are suffering from mental illness or traumatic brain injuries or post-traumatic stress disorder, or, you know, have lost a limb or have had something amputated. I mean, I would love to see something like that. Let me ask one other quick question. As a conservative Republican and a veteran of the Vietnam War, would you be in line, as you said, the government is bloated, $400 to $500 billion every year for the military is a big ticket item in our budget, obviously, in the United States. Would you be open to Congress actually reducing, you know, some of the outlays, if you will, $400 to $500 billion a year, maybe reducing that money that goes to the military in an effort to balance the budget?
No, actually, where I think that money needs to be taken from is it needs to be taken again. Every 2 years, our politicians in Washington, D.C., which we pay their wages.
Sure.
We are their employer, and I'm getting tired of them voting themselves a raise every 2 years that I get to pay for. Got guys that are making $180,000, $200,000 a year sitting up there writing laws that they don't have to abide by, that we do out here, and you take that salary and get it down to a reasonable salary, and then we're talking almost $1 billion there that can go right to the government, to the military.
No doubt about it. Listen, Mike.
Anything that we out of the bloated government and turn it back into our military personnel as far as taking care of them, giving them a quality of life after they retire, after they're out of the service. We need to take care of our own right here at home and quit concentrating on, who's getting what in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is out of control.
No, I hear you. All right, well, listen, Mike, appreciate your time today. Thank you as a conservative Republican calling up the Tom Hartman program. You're always welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Shouldn't part of the military budget be allocated to these veterans?
Well, you would think.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, really, like, put that as part of the budget.
I know, but isn't it kind of ironic that here we are sitting on Veterans Day and we have to talk about ideas such that, you know, we should be allocating money for people when they come back who had their heads blown up or traumatic injuries or, you know, are thinking of suicide and killing themselves. And, you know, it's just sad. It's so sad to put people in harm's way like that and then not take care of them when they're in the time of most need. And hopefully Congress, if anything could be a bipartisan effort, you would think that's a no-brainer. So we'll be back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX, Phoenix, Arizona, here on Veterans Day. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Let's get back to the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-8466. I believe first up in the queue is, let's go to Jim. Jim's listening on Free Speech TV, calling from Boise, Idaho. Jim, welcome on board.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Howdy.
Maybe you read the note there. I'm interested in just talking about replacing Congress with a jury government.
Now, what is that, a jury government? I've never heard of that.
Well, wouldn't you think it would be good to replace Congress with something because of the way that they've been acting?
Well, you could just replace them with different people. Like, what would a jury government do? How would that work?
You won't end up with the same. You'll end up with the same corruption because the system is flawed. You had a caller in earlier,
right?
I think his name was Jeff or John.
Correct.
He talked about Article 5 in the Constitution. And that means that we can basically change our government when it no longer works for us. But we have to go through a constitutional convention, which has never once been used.
Right. It's a very high threshold to do that.
There's a website out there called jurygovernment.org, and it'd be great if you could take a look at it and give comments on it from that.
All right. Well, then I'll check it out, Jim, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. I'd love to call you back at some other point and talk it through.
Well, we'll be out. We'll be here for the next few weeks, so we'll definitely check it out. So I appreciate the call. There I have it. Jim calling in, talking about a jury government. Though I have said in the past the concept of, for medical malpractice, sort of a jury of your peers, if you will, because I see a lot of craziness that goes on with medical malpractice, and I see the way these lawyers actually, you know, take things. Look, you saw with the O.J. Simpson trial when you saw the lawyer talk about the DNA testing and just made it so convoluted and so abstruse that the jury couldn't really even understand this compelling evidence. And in one instance, the juror was actually interviewed after the O.J. trial, and she said that the concept of this DNA analysis was so far beyond her comprehension that she didn't even consider it in making her decision about guilt or innocence. So what I believe is that in medicine, there should be a jury of quote-unquote your peers as a first pass. So in other words, if there's going to be a medical malpractice suit, you should have maybe a jury of, say, 12 people comprised of maybe a nurse, a doctor, maybe a hospital administrator, maybe a physical therapist, a certified nursing assistant, people who are actually involved in the day-to-day hands-on delivery of health care. And then that jury, if you will, can look at a medical malpractice suit, not determine guilt or innocence, but just determine on whether or not the lawsuit meets a certain threshold to go to a regular jury, quote unquote, of your peers, and that the lawsuit would have some merit. I mean, I know a lot of people talk about capping, awards and things like that, and I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think that is a way to fix sort of the medical malpractice quandary that we have in this country. But if you had a jury of your real peers who actually understood medicine and then can determine whether or not something is either frivolous or something has merit, then you would think, I would think, you would filter out a lot of these frivolous lawsuits in our country. But anyway, that's my thoughts on those particular issues. But let's get back to you, the people who want to weigh in with your particular thoughts. Let's go next to Paul. He's listening via Free Speech TV in South Lyon, Michigan. Paul, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, great show, Dr. Mike.
Thank you, sir.
I'm an economist, and I feel like I need to correct that guy a couple callers ago who said that the Democrats are controlled by the banksters. It's actually the Republicans that are controlled by the banksters. They allowed the banksters to crash the economy, you know, back when Bush was president, and destroy 7 million jobs. And you know, the Democrats, under Obama, they re-regulated the banks, the Dodd-Frank bill, and they're trying to get the Volcker Rule through, which would reinstate the protections of Glass-Steagall. So, you know, I'm not saying the Democrats are perfect, but they're not owned and controlled by the banksters. Like
tell people about Glass-Steagall, just so they understand it, because it's something that's thrown out a lot. And, you know, give us the 101 on Glass-Steagall.
Yeah, Glass-Steagall said that it's illegal for banks to engage in speculation and risky investments.
Correct.
That has to be a separate bank that does that. And what the Volcker Rule would do would be to do exactly that. It would be to separate deposits from risky speculation. It would have to be a whole different, you know, I'm not sure if it's a different branch or a different bank. I think it's a different, it has to be a whole different bank.
Right, right. But banks should not be necessarily investment outlets per se.
No, they should. That should be a separate, you know, the brokerage business should be separate. And they also shouldn't be able to invest in conflicting investments like they did in 2006 and 2007, which led to the crash, where they actually sold these investments and had them rated as AAA when they were actually nothing but garbage.
Right, exactly.
They actually bet against them. The banks were telling people, hey, these are great investments. Well, they're shorting them, betting against them, so that when they fail, the banks made a ton of money. And that's what Goldman Sachs did. You know?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, look, that's the thing that a lot of people have skepticism about our financial industry anymore, Paul, is that it's become really one big casino, and it appears as though these banks, you know, have sort of rigged the system such like a casino, you know, where you just ultimately you can't lose. The odds are pretty much against them losing because the way they hedge their bets and the way, like you said, they short certain things, and it's kind of disappointing, I would have to think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what they did in 2007 is they actually ripped off the homeowners with these ridiculous, loans that they were giving out, you know, with no, you know, ninja loans, no income, no job, no assets, you know, they ripped those people off. Then they turned around and ripped off the investors who bought those investments. And then who got the bailout? The banks.
Right. And we didn't see, I don't think we saw one white collar criminal go to jail or prison for any of this, did we?
Yeah, not to my knowledge. Although the government under Obama now is suing Standard & Poor's, I think they're prosecuting Standard & Poor's,
right?
Which was the rating agency that was rating all these nonsense investments as AAA.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Listen, Paul, we got to go to a break. Appreciate your time. Thank you. That's Paul calling in from South Lyon, Michigan. Listen, when we get back at the top of the hour, we still got Yolanda, Rolando, Malcolm, Dennis, others. Give us a shout at 1-866-987-THOM.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at solarworld.com, carbonite.com, automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at carbonite.com, angieslist.com, detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at angieslist.com, stamps.com, postage online from your computer. More information at stamps.com, and our website, tomhartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at tomhartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Okay, welcome back to hour number three of the Tom Hartmann Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today on our special Veterans Day edition. And we got a packed queue of callers right now. So if you want to participate, we have no further guests for the remainder of the program. So anything you want to talk about is fair game. The number, 1-866-987-THOM. Again, 1-866-987-8466. So let's get back to the Freedom Line. Let's go first to Yolanda, listening on 950 AM in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yolanda, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Yolanda.
I'm phoning about your remark about clean elections and keeping outside money out of the Arizona state elections.
Correct.
I believe that Montana also had that law in effect, but the Supreme Court, with Citizens United, overruled the state of Montana in the 2012 elections. I'm not sure if you're aware of that or if that was indeed accurate about Montana being overruled by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Yolanda, the specifics with respect to the Supreme Court and the law in Montana, but I know for a fact that we do have clean elections here in Arizona, and we have not been affected at all by what the Supreme Court ruled with respect to Montana. Clean elections is alive and well here in Arizona. Actually, there's quite a bit of advertising going on television right now with respect to sort of broadening the law, or at least getting more candidates involved and letting the public know that this is something that we here in Arizona cherish. The fact that we have clean elections, the fact that our politicians, when they're elected under the clean election law, if they elect to go clean, because you don't have to go clean, you can actually go the traditional route if you'd like to and be beholden to lobbyists and special interests. But the fact of the matter is that both Democrats and Republicans and Libertarians and Green Party and No Party are able to candidates are able to access this these campaign funds, if you will, and run for office on a platform of ideas versus who you're going to be beholden to based on how much money you got. So it's working here in Arizona for the time being.
So are you saying that the Supreme Court would not overrule a state law?
Well, no. What I'm saying is that whatever the Supreme Court ruled in Montana hasn't affected the clean elections law here in Arizona because it's still up and running.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Yolanda. We appreciate your call regarding clean elections. It opens up another Freedom Line here on the Tom Hartmann Program at 1-866-987-THOM, 1-866-987-8466. Let's go next to – let me see here. Let me – who has been holding the longest here. Okay, well, let's go to Rolando. Rolando, listening on Free Speech TV in Granada Hills, California. Welcome, Rolando.
Thank you, Dr. Mike. I think that your program is right to the point. You explain, you know, what the American people really lack to understand, the problem that we have over here. And that is what we have to tackle most of the station, that progressive station, they had to concentrate and explain the American people what they don't understand. I feel disappointed when they go for all over the map. We have to understand something that happened over there, but mostly you have to concentrate on the problems over here, those problems that are affecting us, so we can react. So
sure.
What we can do, what Dennis Kucinich said, wake up America, you know. I really feel that the As a lot of people, especially the new generation, they are receptive to the problems that we have, and they start to react. we have to support this new generation that want to know, you know, want to understand the problem that we have.
Yeah, what would you say, Rolando, what do you say, in your mind's eye, are the, you know, main problems that we face here in America today?
Okay, first of all, the people don't understand why we have about 40 million people without health care. We have to explain how these people, you know, the big corporations in the medical, they rip it off with the insurance. We have to explain the mechanic, how they rip it off, how,
sure,
why we pay more, about three times more for health care than the European people over there. Why,
sure,
we don't have a universal health care like the most of the development country.
Sure.
That's what we have to concentrate. Once the people understand the thing, they're going to go to the street. And another thing, that the people who have a little conscience, like the people who hear this program over here, they find a lot of ways to not to participate. You know, they want
right.
to participate in the telephone. They want to participate in a meeting that we have. No, the changes that this country has made before, like the women's rights, like the 8 hours labor that we have from this
sure.
country over here, is because the people went to the street. And
right.
you have to realize that you have to go to the street. It's not by the telephone. It's not by the computer that you're going to make the change. Most of the great changes that our society have done is before the computers.
Right.
So, and we still have the Occupy. Contrary to what happened in some other cities, we in LA, we still have the Occupy movement over here that
right.
we meet every Wednesday from 7 p.m. until we finish the agenda. So go over there with the Occupy movement. It's different kind of view. You know, we have a lot of young people that participate in this. We meet in the city, in front of the city hall, every Wednesday from 7 p.m. until we finish the agenda.
And that's in Granada Hills, California, right?
No, that is in L.A. Granada
Hills
belongs to L.A. You know, it's the same big city. But
gotcha.
The big city that the umbrella is L.A. So we meet over there. So,
all right, good. Well, listen, Rolando, let me do this because we got a bunch of other people who want to get in some of their
Bye.
Thoughts. So thank you so much. So that's Rolando calling in. And, look, I agree with him with respect to having to explain things to people because I've done this at least on two or three occasions in the past week, specifically with respect to Obamacare, where I've been in some conversations with some people and – you know, they start, you can tell, hey, what do you think about this Obamacare? It's destroying the country. And I hear all the talking points from Fox News and whatnot. And I stay calm, though, Eric. I stay calm and I just go step by step by step. I take it as an opportunity to evangelize, if you will, to proselytize, at least from my perspective, what the law is all about, how insurance companies operate, and what's really driving the reform and the Affordable Care Act. But when you really sit people down, like Rolando said, and you start explaining it to people in layman's terms, when I explain to people about the insurance, and you guys know I've done this on the show on numerous occasions, how insurance companies work, how they take your money and your benefit, and they put it all into one big pot, and then basically they don't want any of that money to leave that pot because that's how they make money. And if they can set up barriers so that you don't get the care that you need, so that you don't get tests done, so that you don't see doctors, then the insurance company makes a lot of money, basically. That's the bottom line. But when you explain these things little by little by little, you explain them to them that, hey, guess what? Under Obamacare, they can't discriminate against you, the insurance company, based off of you having a pre-existing condition. They can't jack up your rates because you have a pre-existing condition. They can't cap your benefits to a lifetime benefit based off if you got sick and you were, say, in a car accident, you needed rehab over 2, 3, 5, 7, 8 months. An insurance company can't say, yo, guess what? We're done. We paid enough and we're not going to pay any more. So there's so many good things in the legislation and in the law that people just have kind of tuned out or only tuned into what they want to hear. And oftentimes it's talking points. I was talking to a young guy the other day. He's in college. He's at ASU. He's a biochemistry engineer, obviously a bright kid. But I could hear when we were having the conversation, his father's a physician. He was talking about, you know, his father's ideas and how his father doesn't like Obamacare and his father's a specialist and they're going to get less money and they're going to drop Medicare and this and that. A lot of talking points coming from the elders down to the youth. And I took this as an opportunity to speak to the youth directly and say, listen, I in all due respect to your father, and I understand he's a doctor and a professional, but he's not really understanding the law as it is created, as it is intended to be. And I spent 45 minutes talking to this young kid, this young college student, and afterwards, I think we had a convert. I think at least he was looking at it not from the lens or the filter of the conservative pedagogues, but more as an independent. So stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Newcomb, sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back. Let's get to the Freedom Lines. First up is Malcolm, listening on WCPT in Park Forest, Illinois. Welcome, Malcolm.
Hello. Hello, how are you?
All righty. Thanks for calling into the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, my concern is Chris Christie won in New Jersey with 32% of the Democratic vote. And my question is, how and why did that happen? And what are some of the things that I think the Democrats need to find out why? Because however that happened, that coupled with the redistricting, the gerrymandering, voter suppression, voter whatever, is going to be an uphill battle to retake Congress and try to take the Senate to keep them from filibustering the Senate. Because in all honesty, if the Democrats lose the Senate and they don't gain the Congress, they're going to try to impeach President Obama. And my fear is if this happened in a national election in 2016, if 32% of the Democrats went Republican, that would be a disaster.
No, it would be a disaster. Well, listen, let me allay your fears somewhat, because I looked into that too, and I was a little concerned about, you know, the margin of victory that Chris Christie had in the governor's race in New Jersey, and the question was whether or not that type of a candidate, a Chris Christie type of candidate, if you will, would that help the Republicans in 2014 and 2016 if they didn't have the Tea Partiers, if they didn't have the far right conservatives? Well, you can make a very strong argument that Chris Christie is also very far right and very conservative. But when you look at polls for 2016, they looked at Chris Christie, and this was done, you know, maybe within the last month or so. They looked at him going head to head against Hillary Clinton in 2016, and Hillary Clinton, in early polls obviously, soundly defeated Chris Christie to the tune of like 49% to 30-something percent. So it was like, you know, double digits, you know, 10, 15-point difference between Hillary Clinton and Chris Christie. So whatever he did at the governor's level, it didn't translate into a national poll if he were to run for president. And I always find that kind of interesting, how, like you said, how is it at the state level that people would vote for Chris Christie, 32% Democrats, as you had alluded to, versus coming to a federal election for president, it's not the same dynamic with Chris Christie and Hillary Clinton. So it'll be interesting to see, though. You're right, Malcolm, because if any Republican's able to get 32% of Democrats, then that Republican has got definitely a great opportunity, a chance to win an election. So appreciate the call, Malcolm. Thank you.
Okay, and also, how did he do that, though?
Well, I don't know how he did that. As far as the actual exit polling and why Democrats voted for him, that remains to be seen. But I'll definitely check it out. If we get some more information, we'll let you know. Okay, that opens up another Freedom Line here on the Tom Hartman Program, our special Veterans Day edition. 866-987-THOM is the number, 1-866-987-8466. Let's get back to the callers. Let's go next to, I believe, Dennis, listening on Free Speech TV from Greenville, South Carolina. Dennis, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Newcomb. Nice show you're having today.
Thank you, sir.
I wanted to respond to the guy who talked about calling in a constitutional convention. Well,
right.
That's how we got this government, because from the Continental Congress. Now, if you trust your politicians, then you go ahead and call a constitutional convention. Short of anything of Jesus Christ, I ain't calling a constitutional convention, because they can throw everything we have out, and you ain't guaranteed what type of government you're going to get. You understand what I'm saying? That is the most dangerous thing to allow this country to have, is a constitutional convention, because you don't know what the outcome could be, especially when we got corporations controlling our politicians, because the politicians are the ones who give the delegates they will go to a constitutional convention.
Right, right. No, I hear what you're saying, Dennis. Look, as far as I'm concerned, I think the framework and the structure of our government as it exists today is fine the way it is. The problem is that we need to get more people to participate in our democracy so that the power of the people will be heard. That's the problem that we have. Look, if you look at some of these elections, particularly off-year elections, we're lucky if we get more than 50% of eligible people to even vote in our elections, Dennis. I mean, if you go to Scandinavian countries, you go to Norway or Denmark or Sweden, those kind of countries, do you know that when they have elections, they get like 95% or more turnout of eligible voters? So I don't think it's a matter of going to a constitutional convention, as you had alluded to. It's more about getting people to directly participate in their own democracy as it exists. And if they do that, then I think you can have power to the people, truth to power. But when you have more than 50% of the people at times not even participating, Dennis, then that's not really a true democracy. That's not a representative democracy.
Well, actually, we don't have a true democracy here. This is supposed to be a constitutional republic.
Right. Right. No, interesting.
Okay,
so
all you got to do is fine people. Believe me, they'll go to the polls if they gave fines like that for most of the other stuff that they were. If you don't do something right that you're supposed to do, they fine you. All you have to do is give a fine. Believe me, everybody show up at the polls there.
I'm sure that would too. All right, listen, I appreciate the call. All right, that's Dennis calling in from South Carolina. We actually tried to do the opposite here. Eric, remember in Arizona we tried to get a ballot passed, a citizens initiative that actually would pay $1 million to somebody if they voted? Actually, what would happen is whoever voted in, you know, a statewide election, your name would go into sort of a database, and then you would randomly choose one person from that database, and that person would win $1 million. So that everybody who voted
on
election day.
Lottery?
Yeah, an election lottery. So I remember that one of the former candidates who ran for governor tried to put that into a citizen's ballot in an initiative. I don't think it ever passed or ever made headway, but that would be interesting, though. What do you think?
It could work, Mike.
I mean, would you think that would spur more people rather than penalizing them and having them pay a monetary penalty?
It's easier to go to the grocery store and buy a lottery ticket.
Than to vote?
Yes.
All right, well, look, anything to get more people to participate. All right, listen, when we get back, we still got a bunch of callers on the line. We got Carl calling in from Montana. We got Greg from New Jersey. Dan from California. Barbara, also from California. We got Eddie from the Bronx. Also, Deirdre calling in from Congress, Arizona. Eric, our very own.
What a great name.
What a great name. All right, listen, we'll be back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Happy Veterans Day. Okay, welcome back to the program. Eric, as I was getting ready for the show today, I was doing a little show prep.
Bubble bath?
Well, yes, in the bubble bath as well. As you know, I take one or at least two every day, bubble baths. But I was looking on, I think it was CNN or something, and I saw a headline. And this is how crazy our culture is today, though. The headline was something to the effect that woman killed in cougar attack. And the first thing that I thought was it was two women who got into a fight.
And they were cougars.
Right. Like, you know
middle-aged
the middle-aged
women looking, or single middle-aged women.
Right, who are looking for, I guess, younger
love.
Men, or is our love, or whatever. Right, but how strange is that? That my first instinct, I'll have to confess, when I saw that, is I thought it was two women got into a fight, and it was like a cougar fight, and wasn't...
one died.
Actually, you know what? I didn't look up the link. What if it was that?
I think you're wrong.
No, it would have to be a real cougar.
I think a cougar attacked two women.
Yeah. Or, no, it says woman.
Oh, okay.
A woman was killed in it, but anyway... So I thought that was an indictment on our culture and our society. There.
No, just you.
Oh, just an indictment on me and the way I look at the world. All right, listen, let's go to Carl on the line. Carl is listening in Polson, Montana. So, Carl, welcome on board.
Good afternoon, Dr. Newcomb. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Carl. Thank you for listening on the special Veterans Day program today.
Well, thank you. To be frank, I was a little disappointed in your response to the fellow who called in about the government. Mm-hmm. I did the math, and the only example he could give that he would actually take money away from a program was the pay to the members of Congress. And if you multiply all of the members of Congress times a $200,000 salary, you come up to $110 million, which probably, if you took 10% of that away from them, wouldn't do much to aiding the beleaguered veterans in our situation. And that's the trouble when people start doing the boilerplate bloated government. We have to pin them down on what they mean, where they're going to make the cuts, because that's the problem. They always get away with this bloated government mantra, and yet they never tell us what they're going to cut until after they get into office. And then it's always Social Security and veterans benefits and Medicare and education and food to children. And,
right.
And that's what we have to, that's why we have to pin them down before we give them any access to power.
No, Carl, you're 100% right. Listen, the reason I didn't go toe to toe with the guy, one, it's Veterans Day. I know he's conservative, Republican, and, you know, I just wanted to sort of make him feel a little comfortable on the program. But I did try to address with him, as you heard, I said, well, listen, what about the military? You're talking about bloated. I mean, $400-500 billion every year that we're spending in the military. I asked him, you know, up front, Carl, would you be willing to take some cuts from the military? And he frankly said no, right? He said, no, I'd rather go to other things, like you said, salaries for the politician. And as you said, you did the math, and I knew it implicitly that it's that's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket if you were to cut their salary. So he obviously had his mind made up, and he was just giving us the talking points about bloated programs and bloated government. And but yeah, don't touch one of the most expensive government programs that we have, which is the military at $500 billion a year. And it's an argument that, you know, obviously he wasn't going to hear what you and I would have to say, and he wouldn't be able to give any specifics. But, you know, next time they call, I'll put them on the spot and we'll see what they say. How's that?
All right. That was an excellent example. And I'm a veteran, too. But even on Veterans Day, don't let me get away with that kind of shoddy thinking, okay?
You got it, Carl. Appreciate it. Thank you. All right, that's Carl calling
you
in from
task.
Taking me to task right now. But I know what he's saying. And Eric, you know, we've done this multiple times, this bloated government. And he's right. Every time you ask him, give me specifics, tell me which specific program are you going to cut. And ultimately, they don't have any unless it comes out to be, like he said, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And then we know that those are not very popular cuts. And look, you've had Mitt Romney try to win on that particular platform, and he lost. And you know, it's not something that resonates with the public. The public doesn't want to see these benefits cut. So let's go to Greg listening on WWRL in Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Welcome, Greg.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well today.
Good.
Had to think about it.
Thank you. It sounds like we have a delay there. All right, so what do you want to talk about today? Jesse Ventura, the body? What's the body doing now? Jesse the body.
He's going to run for president with Howard Stern as his vice president. And, I would like to know what you think about that and the fact that there's been no media coverage on it, and he's going to run not as one of the two parties, obviously. And
well,
I just want to know your opinion on that.
Well, let me tell you, first of all, I have to confess that I am a big Howard Stern fan, as is Eric,
yes.
You know, and many people in my family. And I've heard this banter about running for president and vice president. But listen, Stern is, you know, he's kind of teasing us because he did the same thing way back in the day when he was going to run for
governor.
No, or mayor. Was
it
a
mayor or
a
governor? I thought it was governor.
I thought it was mayor or governor.
But
or
once they wanted to see his finances and all that stuff.
Right. And then he kind of backed out at the end. So I don't think Stern's going to be running for anything, for sure.
It's tongue in cheek.
But it's tongue in cheek. But you know what? Jesse Ventura, don't ever put anything past him, though, Greg, because Jesse Ventura, as you know, everyone took him for granted, and then he ran as an independent in Minnesota and won handily for governor of Minnesota. So Jesse Ventura is a very thoughtful person. He's very bright, and he's willing to take risk, and he could be a spoiler. Even if he got on the ballot, he could make a difference and throw the election one way or the other. I don't think he'd get enough support to actually win for president, but look, if you miss every shot you don't take, right? If you don't take a shot, you can't make it, right, Greg? Hello?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was saying.
All right. I'm waiting. Yeah, where's the Baba Booey? We're waiting for Baba Booey.
Yeah.
I thought that's where that was headed.
Yeah, I thought so too. All right. Well, anyway, we Baba Booey you. It was a prophylactic Baba Booey. So we'll talk to you later. Thank you. That's Greg calling in from WWRL. Before they could say Baba Booey,
we did it.
We did it before him. So there you have a little bit of preemption here. Okay, let's go next to Colfax, California. We got Dan, the man, on the line, and wants to talk about what this day should be about or not be about. So Dan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I mean, I can be a little bit disappointed because today this day should not be about celebrating militarism in any shape or form. This day should be a day where people are working towards peace and celebrating those people who are working towards peace. You know, and in my opinion, any veteran not working towards peace is not worth his salt because he didn't learn anything, especially if
right.
he was a combat veteran.
No, look, Dan, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I mean, we talked earlier. I don't know how much you've been listening throughout the day, but we did talk about the concept of a Department of Peace that Congressman Kucinich talked about in the past. And
yeah, he's,
you know,
he's one of my heroes.
Yeah, I love Dennis Kucinich, too. And I think that you're right. To me, you know, the best soldiers in the world are not the soldiers who relish the thought of going out there and wreaking
Correct.
Havoc and destruction and are bloodthirsty and just want to, you know, rack up the number of kills. Yeah.
You know, for me, I don't want to be honored or thanked. This is a day of sorrow and shame for me being, you know, this is not, you know, this is the day when I realized that my country betrayed me mm-hmm. and put me in a position to kill innocent civilians in Vietnam.
So you served in Vietnam?
That's one of the reasons why a lot of these kids come back.
Yeah.
From the military, and everybody, no one wants to, you know, address the dog in the doghouse. Which is essentially that a lot of these kids come back with unbelievable amount of guilt, not what they saw, but what they participated in.
Right, what they did. No, you're 100% right. And look, that's ultimately, you know, my vision of the military. It should be a peacekeeping force, not a death and destruction force. And I think we have very different views about that politically, ideologically in this country. I think people on the right and people who are conservatives view the military distinctly differently than perhaps the progressive community and the liberal community. So I appreciate your commentary. And again, thank you for your service. But again, I'm sorry that you had to go through that and you know, but thank you for sharing your insight, okay?
Yeah, you wanted me to say anything else?
No, that's all. I'm going to go to the other callers now.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, that's Dan there. Okay, anybody can say whatever they want at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go next to L.A., Los Angeles, California. We got Barbara listening on KPFK. Barbara, welcome.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on how mental health is treated in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's way too much stigma about the people afflicted with mental illness, and also it's seen as a cash cow for the pharmaceutical companies and those of us that are mentally ill that want to try alternative treatments. They aren't covered by Medicare, so it's a real problem. Not everybody wants to use pharmaceuticals, and I'm not saying that those who do are wrong, but for those of us who want to try something else, it's not offered to us, and it's a real problem.
Yeah, well, Barbara, you're correct. I know that mental health parity is a big issue. I remember back in the governor's race in 2002 when I had thrown my hat into the ring for office, that was a huge issue. Everywhere I traveled, people would ask me throughout the state of Arizona, Dr. Mike, what about mental health? What about mental health? Because you're right, it is stigmatized. It's not a benefit that is completely covered, equivalent to, say, like diabetes or the treatment for high blood pressure. And it's a very real illness. It's biologically based. It has to do oftentimes with an imbalance of chemicals or neurotransmitters in your brain. And I agree, Barbara. I know under the Affordable Care Act, there is specific legislation and verbiage in there with respect to mental health parity. But there's a long way to go to get commercial and private insurers to recognize mental illness as a real bona fide disease that deserves equal treatment along with other diseases and illnesses that we treat. So thanks a lot, Barbara. Appreciate you calling in today.
Thank you.
Okay, there you have it. It's Barbara. All right, listen, the Freedom Express pulling up to its final stop, its final destination for today. We'll be back with your final calls in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb broadcasting from 1480 KPHX here in the desert, Phoenix, Arizona, on our special Veterans Day edition. Okay, welcome back to the final segment for today, our special Veterans Day edition of the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today, as well as tomorrow and Thursday of this week. So let's get to Deirdre. She's calling in from Congress, Arizona, and she wants to talk about why Chris Christie won. So, Deirdre, welcome on board.
Hi.
Hello.
How you doing, Dr. Mike?
Every day's a blessing, Deirdre.
I think he won.
I noticed up in a certain part of New Jersey, there are a lot of rich people. I know he went there the day before the elections. And I do believe that a lot of the people there are inside the lens and not looking outside the lens. He hasn't really done anything for them except raise their property tax to give tax breaks to the rich. Mm-hmm. And I believe they're 39th in job creation in the state. And the people that have rebuilt their homes, some of them have used their 401ks to do it with.
Right.
And now they're $25, you know, mortgage, I mean a 25-year mortgage. And then the others are suing along with HUD an investigation through HUD going on where the money has gone that was supposed to go to the Sandy victims because they haven't seen it.
Right. Right. Well, look, here's the bottom line with Chris Christie. I mean, I think the reason that he won and got such popular support was that not because of his policies. And look, we as progressives and liberals, we could totally, if we look strictly at his record, show that he is an inferior candidate when it comes to governing and public policies. And we just completely are diametrically opposed to what his vision for the future is. But that being said, Deirdre, I think one of the things that he did do, which I will give him credit for, which I have not seen many Republicans do, quite frankly, or many conservatives, is that he was willing to thank the president and give the president credit for his leadership during, as you said, the Sandy crisis, and going there amidst all that natural disaster, all of that havoc, all of that pain, suffering, death, destruction, and to be able to reach across the aisle and thank the president for the president keeping his word, going to New Jersey and helping Chris Christie in a time of crisis and need. And I think that really struck a chord with many people, quite frankly, because many people thought that was more important to them than specific policy stances. And that's where I think Chris Christie got a lot of good sort of feedback, and he got a lot of street cred, if you will, from many people who are not necessarily conservative Republicans, and they were willing to say, look, this is a guy who's willing to work together with people. He's a guy who's willing to at least thank somebody for a job well done. And we haven't seen that come from the right. We haven't seen that come from conservatives in the last several decades. And I think that's what struck a chord with people in New Jersey.
Well, that looks very nice, but he also was running for reelection, and it is a blue state.
No.
And right after he met with President Obama, he went off to meet with the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
With Romney and the others.
Look, I'm not saying he'd have to speak with forked tongue, but the bottom line is I think that's partly why he won that particular election. So listen, Deirdre, I thank you so much. We're going to get to some of the other callers. Thanks for calling in from Congress,
thank
Arizona.
You.
Okay. Let's get next to, let's see here. Let's go to, let me see who's up next holding along. Let's go to Eddie, listening on WBAI in Bronx, New York. Eddie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. My question is about Obamacare.
Yes.
I just want to know what you thought about about basically Obama not doing enough for Obamacare. Basically, why didn't he make it more of a government-type program, the universal health care, maybe extending Medicare? I was talking to my professor about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or instead of kind of putting this restriction on private companies, doing away with trying to do away with private company health insurance. Like I think Tom mentioned this in one of his shows that basically this type of program should not be put into private companies because their sole purpose is to make money and is not for the benefits of their customers who probably need the health.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, Tom is 100% right. I mean, Eddie, the bottom line is this. If you have a for-profit private insurance company, their job is to collect the money from you as far as your premiums and then not really give anything back because that's how they make money. And what initially many progressives, including myself, wanted to see was a single-payer option in the sense that we have with Medicare, that if people wanted to join up into this program, all they needed to do was simply go through Medicare, and you'd have the same subsidies, the same infrastructure, and it would just be run by the government without a profit motive. And I agree. I think ideally that's the best place where you can move towards with respect to healthcare delivery, but in order to compromise, in order to get at least, you know, to move a step or two forward, the Democrats were willing to compromise and keep this public-private hybrid, if you will, which I think is inferior to what Tom and others have proposed as far as a single-payer system, you know, Medicare for all. Bernie Sanders, he's also recommended that as well. So, look, it's progress in the sense that we've moved forward. There's certain provisions in the law. Like I told you, it's pre-existing conditions, no lifetime caps. They can't change your benefit once it starts. There are good things in the law, but by no means, Eddie, are we anywhere near where we could be. And look, the sad thing is that this website that's supposed to allow people to enroll got off to a rocky start. Obviously, they're in the process of fixing that. I think they will fix it. And I think once it's fixed, more people will have access to affordable health care and affordable insurance. And then hopefully that will use that as a building block, a foundation for other things. But I agree with you. It could have. We didn't get everything we wanted, Eddie.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, that's Eddie calling in there from the Bronx, New York. Let's go next to Jimmy on WCPT in Barrington, Illinois. Jimmy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a few comments that I'd like to make.
Well, you only got about 30 seconds or 45 seconds because you're the last caller today, Jimmy, so make your points.
You got it. I would like to see the Democrat Party have a 24-hour radio station, 24-hour TV station, so we could get the story directly from the party. And if the Republicans wanted to do that, too, I think it would be great.
All right. Well, listen, you got the last word there, Jimmy, today from Barrington, Illinois. Dr. Mike, I want to thank everybody for sharing their time with us today and your commentary, your insights on this special Veterans Day edition of the Tom Hartman program. We will be back tomorrow, so... As always, as Tom says, democracy is a participatory sport, so tag, you're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. Solar World has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.